weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome back to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the science behind weather and climate in Illinois. I'm your host, Maddie Stover, a doctoral student in physics here at the U of I.
And I'm Trent Ford, state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute.
To talk about solar energy harvesting, we are joined by Madhu Khanna, director of the Institute for Sustainability, Energy, and Environment at the U of I, and Linda Durhack, Energy and Climate Outreach Associate with Illinois Extension. Madhu and Linda, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us here.
Yeah, it's great to be on the show today.
So Madhu, could you tell us a little bit about your role as director of the Institute for Sustainability, Energy, and Environment at U of I?
My role is threefold. We try to bring together researchers from across campus with different disciplinary perspectives to work together in teams to solve the complex sustainability challenges that no discipline alone can solve. We also have value-added educational programs to train our students in interdisciplinary science related to sustainability. And then lastly, our institute is responsible for charting the strategic path for making our campus carbon neutral by 2050.
And Linda, could you tell us a little bit about your work on solar energy as part of Illinois Extension?
Yes. So at Extension, we're in every county. And so what I do on the statewide energy team is providing the resources that those communities would need to know about solar technologies. So that could be anything from utility scale solar coming in or understanding the state programs available to them on the residential scale.
And Linda, could you define for us the difference between utility scale solar and, say, like home solar?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the home solar, that's what you're typically going to see mounted on rooftops. And then utility scale is those larger projects doing megawatts of energy produced, usually outside of the city limits. And then you also have middle ranged projects, which might be on like commercial buildings or businesses.
And what are some of the considerations when finding places to install these individual smaller solar scale projects and then larger utility scale like solar farms?
Yeah, so, you know, if you're a homeowner trying to figure out, you know, is solar right for you, it's really good to take into account your roof, you know, where is the sun shining, the quality of your roof, does it need to be replaced because those solar panels are going to be on there for a long time. And then when it comes to utility scale, there's a lot of considerations that the developer would have to consider, like proximity to transmission lines and also the sunlight. There's parts of our state that are a lot more suited to solar because they have that flat land and they get a lot more solar potential as well. So you wouldn't see it evenly distributed throughout the state as well. And then just making sure that, you know, the land is a good use for solar and taking into account the zoning regulations as well.
Yeah, and Madhu, you know, for a long time I've heard this kind of contrast or maybe competition between solar panels, especially the big solar farms, and agriculture, but apparently they can occupy the same land at the same time. So how does this work?
Yeah. So this competition really arises because utility scale solar is fairly land intensive. You need about 5 to even 10 acres of land for 1 megawatt of electricity. And so there is concern in certain regions where you could have concentrated solar farms. And as was just mentioned, the placement of these solar farms is heavily dictated by access to the grid. So areas that are close to the grid can actually be very good for producing, having large solar farms. And this causes conflict because solar farms can displace tenants as well as small farmers, and it can raise the price of land for other farmers. A lot of the agriculture community may not want to see solar panels in their backyard. And so for all of these reasons, there is, you know, considerable community opposition to large solar farms coming up. And so one of the technologies that we have been studying here at the University of Illinois is called agrivoltaics. And agrivoltaics can take various forms. It can be done with growing crops either in between the panels or underneath the panels. And a variety of different types of crops are being experimented with, including the field crops we grow here, like corn and soybeans, as well as grasses and specialty crops and vegetables, in order to understand how they perform under panels. But in addition to crops, another growing area of interest is having grazing of animals as a way to both maintain the grasses that grow underneath the panels and to provide an alternative use that uses the land for food and feed production.
And how abundant is this agrivoltaics in Illinois?
Agrivoltaics is just starting, and there's really some solar farms that are now coming up, particularly, for example, in southern Illinois and in Indiana and other places, are proposing to have crop agrivoltaics. But really, at this moment, most of this is only at an experimental stage. What is more prevalent is to have animal grazing. In particular, sheep grazing has been very much more widely adopted than crop agrivoltaics.
We actually saw a study published, I don't know, maybe a week ago or so, that showed that the nutrition value boosted of the some of the perennials that could go under the shade of the for sheep grazing of the solar panels. So I guess having more shade for the soil, sometimes we think of a shade as being counterproductive to crop production, but you know, does having the shade from solar panels, I mean, what kind of issues can that lead to crop productivity, or how does it affect crop productivity?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the effect really varies with the type of crop. So crops like soybean and corn require full sun, and so they don't do as well under shade. Other crops may be less affected, like our research with sorghum suggests that sorghum is less negatively affected by shade compared to soybeans. And then crops, certain crops like shade. So if you're growing vegetable crops in particular, you know, tomatoes and kale and peppers, their productivity increases because solar panels help to preserve the moisture and prevent so much of evaporation. And that helps to boost the productivity of those types of vegetable crops. The impact also varies across locations. So in Illinois, of course, we have it's all rain-fed, and so our corn and soybeans, for example, get, you know, they like a lot of sun and they have the moisture that they need. But as we move more towards the west, it is either semi-arid or arid conditions, and in those places, having shade can really benefit both the grasses as well as the specialty crops, and their yields grow up, increase, and also the quality of the produce increases because it has more moisture.
You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about Illinois weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover, PhD physics student at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, along with Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. We're talking about solar energy with Madhu Khanna, Director of the Institute for Sustainability, Energy, and Environment at the U of I, and Linda Durhack, Energy and Climate Outreach Associate with Illinois Extension. So Linda, if someone is interested in powering their home with solar or, you know, adding solar to the types of energy that are powering their home, how can they learn more about if this decision is right for them?
That's a really good question. I think a big piece of this would probably be the financial component and understanding the different incentive programs that are available to see, you know, if that makes sense for you and how much money you'd be able to save. I think it's also really important to have a holistic perspective when it comes to installing solar and really thinking about what your energy use is. It's always a great spot to start with doing like a home energy audit and understanding what your needs are so that if you do go get solar, you understand the kind of system you need, how big it is, to just make sure that it is right sized for you. Thinking about something like battery storage as well. Is that something you're interested in? Because that's going to change the conversation as well. And just being mindful of the rebates and programs that your utility is providing. So we can go more in depth into the specific incentive programs, but just having that overall view from the onset will be very helpful.
And follow-up question here. You led us right into this one perfectly, Linda. You know, can you talk a little bit about some of those state or federal subsidies for home solar?
That is a really good question, and I think we might need to zoom out a little bit to kind of understand how these programs are funded. So basically, with Illinois, we passed the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act back in 2021, and that created a renewable portfolio standard for Illinois, which basically says that by 2030, we want 40% of our energy to come from renewable sources. So utilities are working on expanding that. So basically, that then has the system called renewable energy credits that the Illinois Power Agency, they manage this program. And so basically utilities are being, they're incentivized to buy these credits. And what those credits are is basically when 1 megawatt of renewable energy is produced, this credit has all of the benefits that come with that. It's not necessarily the electricity. And so with our state programs in Illinois, those are based on these RECs pretty much. So we have two state programs in Illinois. We have Illinois Shines and we have Illinois Solar for All. And the biggest difference between them is that Solar for All is for people who your median income is, your household in median income is 80% or less of the average. So it's an eligibility program, whereas Illinois Shines, there is no eligibility required. However, for both of these, they can fill up throughout the year. So you just need to make sure that you're, checking that regularly. And so what's really great about these programs is that they work with approved vendors that are vetted by the state program. And so basically, as these programs, work with people, the approved vendor can get the renewable energy credit when they, build the project, and then the utility pays them, and then they're able to pass on some of those savings to you. So, for example, in Illinois Shines, when you're getting a solar project, they will estimate the amount of RECs that that project will produce over the lifetime. So that's 15 to 20 years, and that is a lump sum payment. It can take some time to eventually get that payment from them. And you would definitely want to read the contract to just figure out all of those details, get multiple bids from approved vendors, everything like that. But basically, those renewable energy credits can save, thousands of dollars on these projects. And then with Solar for All, basically, it's more guaranteed savings than Illinois Shines because it is income-based. And then when you have the federal program, there were changes to this one this year, but basically what it is it's a tax credit that is 30% of the project. And it needs to be installed by the end of the year. And it can take months to get a solar project fully installed. So if that's something you are interested in, it would be wise to start that, as soon as possible, just to make sure that is installed by the deadline of December 31st, 2025.
So you told us a little bit about some of these savings that can come from, using solar in your home. Obviously, there's a big upfront cost with purchasing and installing the panels. Is there a how long does it take kind of to account for that upfront cost with these savings that you get from solar energy?
I'll be honest, that is a really hard question to answer, just given how much it can fluctuate between systems and different needs, and especially because there's also different finance options to take into consideration. For example, you could take out a loan, or you could lease the panels, or you could just pay for the power, just do a power purchase agreement, so you're just purchasing the electricity. It definitely does take, several years to, recoup the savings, but it really depends on what finance option you're doing. Something like Illinois Solar for All, that has guaranteed savings and no upfront costs. So that would be pretty immediate that you would see those savings.
And you alluded to this in talking about, you know, purchasing solar electricity. But if you're not in a position to install solar in your home, are there some other ways you can use solar energy in your, you know, daily life?
Yes, I love this question because as a renter, I'm always thinking about, you know, ways to benefit from solar. So what's great about Illinois is that we do have these community solar programs. And so basically what this is a solar developer, they build a project and then you can lease out, you know, a panel, the electricity that it's producing, and then you can get credits from that to reduce your bill. And so the only thing about that is it's only within your, you know, utilities area. And you just would need to make sure, you know, if you move out of the area, there might be a fee if you're ending that contract early. So you would just want to ask a lot of questions, you know, as you were reviewing a contract, knowing what the terms are, you know, how much you're paying, how much are you actually saving, you know, maybe comparing a couple if that's an option for you. And so I think community solar is a very popular way if you can't install panels yourself. I will say another interesting technology that I've been seeing that has been coming up more, and you're probably going to start hearing about it, would be balcony solar. There's only one state so far that has legislation for this, so it's still very upcoming, but that is another way for people to have these smaller panels that they can set up themselves, and then they can also get some savings. But that is still a bit early stages here, but just something to keep in mind.
So hold on, you teased us there, but I'm gonna push you on the balcony solar a little bit. Are these panels large enough that they could provide, let's say, in a really tight, busy street in a city, are these panels large enough they could provide some shade and also maybe cool the city a little bit?
I think they could. I mean, you could definitely be creative in that way. I know that in Illinois, there's already some projects where they've been installing solar panels on parking lots. I mean, that's, you know, a definitely a bigger kind of project. But yeah, and I think also for these, you know, people are installing them on a balcony. So if you think about it, that could also provide you shade as well.
Shout out, with a young child, I've hit up my fair share of Midwest zoos. And we're just going to shout out the Cincinnati Zoo for having the majority of their parking lot under solar power, which is really nice, or solar panels, because you come back on a hot day to a nice shaded car. Plus, they made electricity, so...
You're listening to Weather Realness, the podcast about Illinois weather and climate. I'm Maddie Stover, PhD physics student at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, along with Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. We're talking about solar energy with Madhu Khanna, Director of the Institute for Sustainability, Energy, and Environment at the U of I, and Linda Durhack, Energy and Climate Outreach Associate with Illinois Extension. Madhu, I want to ask you quickly on the economic side. So can you talk about the price of solar electricity compared to other types of, say, maybe fossil fuels and then other types of renewable energy?
So solar energy costs have really been coming down, and I think it is now very competitive with fossil energy. So you actually can produce it without subsidies. The marginal cost, or the cost of every kilowatt hour produced, is very low. But the big challenge with solar is the upfront costs. And so having, some investment tax credits or other ways to cover that upfront cost can be very beneficial. But then once you've installed the solar panels, then it's, costing very much similar to what fossil energy costs. Now, if we're looking at agrivoltaics, however, there the upfront costs are even higher than for regular conventional solar, because the panels have to be raised. And currently, the panels in a conventional solar farm are about 4 feet tall. And if we want to do agriculture next to the panels, they need to be 6 to even 8 or 12 feet if you're thinking of growing a crop like corn. And the cost of raising those panels increases more than proportionately to the height of the panels, because you need a lot of reinforcement, and the cables have to be buried underground so that the soil can be tilled and things like that. And so almost the cost of electricity with agrivoltaics could be almost twice as high as that with the conventional solar if you're looking at in the Midwest.
So this is a question for both of you, and feel free to take it whatever way you'd like to, but going to open broadly, what do you think the future of solar energy looks like in Illinois?
I would say that we have a lot of potential to produce it. The amount of land that we would want is a very small fraction of our cropland. Main, of course, challenge is the access to the grid. But even with that, we can certainly increase the share of solar that is being produced. It's really more a question of the social acceptability of solar energy and recognizing that, communities feel like, this is taking away land from agriculture and it's creating groups that are disadvantaged, more than the landowner who might benefit from the higher lease payments that are being paid for solar farms. But it is the other members of the community that are affected. And so it's really building acceptance, and that is where agrivoltaics can actually play a role. There is a lot of research suggesting that, farmers and the ag community prefer to have multifunctional landscapes, where it's not just all solar, but solar that is combined with crop production or animal grazing or pollinators, where the land is actually being put to more, productive use and is more ecosystem friendly, is preferable to solar alone. And so for that reason, I would imagine that agrivoltaics is going to have a role to play as we try to expand solar.
And Linda, what about you?
I mean, that is such an excellent point about agrivoltaics. I'm very glad that you brought that up because the community acceptance is such a big part of this. I will say, I know that there may be some uncertainty around, funding for renewable energy. However, I think for Illinois, knowing that we have these robust state programs that are funded by our state legislation and that they will continue to be available for years to come, I think it says that the solar future still looks really bright in Illinois, and these programs are still here for you to access. So I just want to provide some reassurance that there will be a positive solar future for Illinois.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, Madhu and Linda, both for joining us.
Thanks for having me here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Madhu Khanna is the director of the Institute for Sustainability, Energy, and Environment at the U of I. And Linda Durhack is a Climate and Energy Outreach Associate with Illinois Extension. We're excited to announce we've received our first audience question.
Good morning. I've always been interested in ball lightning. Curious how it forms, what are the conditions, how frequent does it happen?
Steve, as chair of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois, what's your answer for that?
It's a question that gets my electrons flowing every day. So anyway, this is obviously something that's very much in the sort of nomenclature of weird things on Earth. Ball lightning is something that not many people see, but certainly gets its share of stories and interesting discussions going when it is brought up. But it's really an interesting phenomenon that usually happens around thunderstorms. It can be described as kind of like a glowing sphere of various sizes, maybe as small as a golf ball, but as big as a beach ball. And it usually floats or drifts really strangely in sometimes unexpected places, like inside an airplane, passing between windows and doors. And it really can last for seconds or even much longer than that, even into many seconds. So sometimes it makes sound, but we really don't have a lot of description of this because it's so rare and we don't have a laboratory that can really reproduce it reliably. Scientists are really debating exactly what it is, though. It's kind of interesting. It's unpredictable, hard to measure, and so some people think it's like a plasma, like exists in lightning anyway, where electrons get split off of atoms, and there's this glowing. It's really superheated and ionized in terms of gas, but it's really unusual in terms of its visual presentation. Usually, gases in the form of plasma disappear instantly, but these last for a long time, so it kind of defies expectations. Another strong theory is that lightning is generated by microwaves. So you probably don't do this in your own microwave oven, but if you trap very high power microwaves in a small area, you can actually cause glass gases to become glowing. And this can happen, and this has happened in a laboratory. And some theories are that you're actually illuminating that atmosphere with microwaves and causing that to glow. Another theory is that there's actually silicon particles or particles that come from the soil that get electrified by lightning, and that also can produce a glowing sensation to the eye. But regardless, it's really an interesting phenomenon. It's very dramatic, and it's really fascinated people for centuries. My wife has seen it on an airplane, and she describes it as one of the strangest things she's ever seen. But either way, it's a reminder that even things like lightning, which happens every day, can be really unusual in our atmosphere.
Is ball lightning dangerous?
Yeah, you should treat it like any other electromagnetic hazard. It's high power. You do not want to touch that with your body or your skin because you might get burned or electrocuted. So very high voltages, and it's best to avoid.
Thank you for that question. If you have a weather or climate question you'd like us to answer, give us a call at 217-333-2141. Again, 217-333-2141. Or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. Weather Realness is produced by
Jeff Frame,
Trent Ford,
Steve Nesbitt,
Reginald Hardwick,
and myself, Maddie Stover. Funding for this podcast is partially provided by the Backlund Charitable Trust. Weather Realness is produced by the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with you again next week.